Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 289. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight, we have Holly Felmuth.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Holly. Today, we have a special show. It's just myself and Holly, but we have the normal show structure to run through. We're going to start off with what we've been playing, move over to the Nintendo news, and we're going to finish on with a piece called Thanks for the Games, a special Thanksgiving feature. To start with what we've been playing, I've picked up a new Wii U game, Wii Party U. So the only way I could actually pick up Wii Party U was with the controller bundle. And as we discussed on a previous show, I already had four controllers, so it's gone to a friend who needed a Motion Plus.
How nice of you.
Yeah, the odd thing is, I'm not sure if this is a UK specific thing, but when they do these games with the Wii Remote bundled, it usually is a slightly cheaper than the retail price of the Wii Remote. Only by a couple of pounds, but it just makes that pricing model of their remote seem a bit off-skew when it's side-by-side. The game itself is actually really quite fun, at least if you've got a bunch of mates with you. I've not tried playing this single-player, but as the tradition goes with these sort of games, it's not a great experience, or I imagine it probably won't be for this game. However, I can't really vouch for that at this point. I've played this with group of two people, a group of three, and a group of four. It works best with the group of four, but there are some cool modes you can play if it's just the two people there. The game itself is kind of split up into these three main sections. Your first section is more like your traditional Mario Party type game. So you have a bunch of characters and you go across a board. Usually the way it works is after everyone's had their turn, you play a mini game, and that will help you in some way achieve, you know, the greater goal of winning the game. Kind of the second set of games are games for two people playing on the gamepad exclusively. I don't think on any of these games you look at the TV, and so usually you kind of rotate the gamepad so you're both looking at it long ways. It will give you some little game to play, and it can be with the touchscreen, but it can also be with some of the buttons and the analog sticks. And one of my particular favourites currently is a simple game of foosball, where you use the analog stick to move around your players, and it's as simple as that, really. And you know, just like foosball, you knock the ball around, but it's just quite nice seeing it kind of as this little tabletop game. And the third set of games in Wii Party U are games which use the gamepad and the Wii remotes in a more of a Nintendo Land, WarioWare, or Game & Wario type fashion. And there's a whole bunch of these different types of games. They all have different types of duration that they take to play. One of my particular favourites out of them is called A Sketchy Situation. You take turns passing the gamepad around, and it will ask you to draw a certain picture, which only you know what that picture is. Now, three of the people are all drawing the same picture, but the fourth person, who again you don't know who that one is drawing something ever so slightly different. So it's usually something like three people are drawing horses and one person's drawing a donkey. They all pop up on the TV without their names, and you have to guess who is drawing the odd one out. And that sounds really simple at first, but you only have about 15 seconds to draw your little picture. And because it only tells you what you're about to draw when the clock starts ticking, you get all these kind of very special pictures, I like to call them. And so that can be a great game, and there's some also cool games which use the camera and the other unique features.
I was just watching a video review before the show on Wii Party U just to kind of get an idea of what's good and what's bad about the game. And one of the big complaints that the reviewer had was the, you know, like game board like maps that you have to play on when you do like a party with your friends. because they're, you know, really simple. You just are going from one end to the other, and it's like almost worse than Chutes and Ladders, which is for, you know, toddler age kids. And so I just wanted to ask, like, what you thought about those maps.
One of them is very much like Chutes and Ladders, and it's not a great one to play. So it is a really mixed range. I've only played a couple of the boards. The one thing they, which is quite good, in that board section, there are these games which aren't technically boards. So one of them is like a, and I'm not sure how you, what it's, the official name is, but if you know those like machines you get in the arcades where you drop like a, imagine a quarter down, it'll roll down where it knocks over coins.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that concept.
There's a board game which is essentially that. So you're not actually moving around the boards, but after each player's round of mini games, you'll get to put down a certain amount of coins into the machine. And however many coins you actually manage to win during your turn are your ultimate points. So in that game, you're not actually traveling around the boards. You are doing the kind of, you're playing like a meta game, then you're playing a mini game, then you're going back to that other game. And I much preferred how that particular setup was compared to the more Chutes and Ladders one I played. But I've only played like 2 out of 8 in that category. The actual board game of the one I did play was a bit disappointing. But it's an odd bag, really. Because they do have these three distinct modes, there's some really good elements in all three. But it seems like if there was like a mode which kind of just combined them all a little, so you have more variety, and I think that would be a better experience. But there is a lot of fun to be had in Wii Party, to be fair. But you just kind of need to, you need to know what's good in the package, and you need to jump from one area to another.
Yeah, it's not half bad of a value, you know, for people who don't happen to have 4 Wii Remote Pluses. It's a really good way to get a Wii Remote Plus, plus a game to come with it. And here it's only, well, you can get a Wii Remote Plus for about $40. And, you know, a typical Wii U game is like $60. I don't know how much Wii Party U is, but it's almost like getting a Wii Remote and then a game for pretty cheap, because the game only adds up to like $10 or $20. So for people who don't have the Wii Remote, it's not too bad a deal.
Yeah, I think it works even more favorably over here. Because as I said before I started this, just comparing the prices of this particular shop I was in, Wii Party U with its Motion Plus controller was cheaper than a Motion Plus controller on its own. So I'm not sure what goes on there, but I don't think it was the only store having it priced that way. So yeah, no, it's definitely great value. It's more like how Wii Play was advertised, and obviously this is a much more game of substance than Wii Play was.
Can't say I remember Wii Play. I might have played it because I was a member of Gamefly for a while, and I ended up playing a lot of those little just Wii games that came with Wii remotes.
Yeah, so that was like the, obviously after Wii Sports, that was the next Wii game. But it came with the Wii remote. And because of that, because there's also like Wii remote shortages and such, Wii Play with its remote was one of the top selling games in America and Europe for a long time. And it was just because it came with this remote, and remotes were in such short supply, and it made this game look a great deal, because it was, I think it was just for a couple of dollars more, a couple of pounds more, you would have this bundle with both. But the actual collection itself was about, I think it was 8 mini games, and they didn't have different modes, they were all very kind of straightforward mini games. So you definitely didn't get as like much replay value as you did with the Wii Sports or the Wii catalog titles.
So there was Wii Play, and then wasn't there a Wii Party that was for Wii? So the Wii Party U is kind of like a sequel to that?
So I think Wii Party is a bit more similar to Mario Party than this was. So where this has got these kind of 3 distinct modes, the original Wii Party was more focused on that first one with the boards. And it's possible because of that reason it had these more sophisticated boards. But it did have these, also sample these other little modes you could play, which are quite fun. So you could jump into a mode and it will give you like, this mode will take 10 minutes to play, this mode will take 5, and you'll need, you know, 4 people or whatever. But Wii Party U has taken that a step further with these different distinct modes. The one I would personally recommend out of the 3 is probably the games which do involve the gamepad and the Wii remotes. I think they are better than the board games themselves. It's a total of 8 different games you can play with the gamepad and the Wii remotes, using them in a variety of different ways. Because those games are much more similar to the Nintendo Land type games. And so there's quite a lot of replay value, and they're also just quite funny with the uses of the drawing items on the screen and using the camera.
Something that kind of interested me in previews for the game was it's a game where someone makes a facial expression and takes a picture of that, and then everyone else has to guess which facial expression out of like four options that they were trying to make. So that actually looked like it would be pretty fun.
That one went down pretty well, actually. Yeah, I mean, each time it comes up with these very bizarre different expressions, and I think it becomes even funnier when you see your friend in the corner holding up a gamepad over their face, and then just kind of squirming behind it, not knowing what they need to do for this weird expression it's given them. Because, yeah, it will give you some odd things, like I had, like, lifting a heavy box. So if you can just try and visualize what that face is. What's even worse is when it pops up on the TV, not only will it have, you know, lifting a heavy box, is fearful of what's coming around the corner, or is trying to balance on one leg, or, you know, just these weird things.
Yeah, some examples I can think of from what I've seen are chewing on air, roaring like a tiger, things like that.
Yeah, that's the sort of stuff. I think what Wii Party U is doing is kind of separating itself a bit more away from Mario Party, where the original Wii Party was kind of a bit like Mario Party with Miis. A few other unique bits, this is now like a completely separate party game, which is good. Yeah, I definitely recommend Wii Party U if you are going to be able to actually play it with a group on occasion. And you can actually play it for a fair amount of time. I mean, the first time I played it, and this was with a group of four people, I think we ended up playing it throughout all the different modes, between 4 and 5 hours. And it was only because I checked the activity log. It was that length of time. I didn't realise we had been playing it that long. I was pleasantly surprised because it wasn't because we were particularly bored of it. It was just that is when the night ended, as it were. It can definitely last, and there's lots of different types of things to do. And it also has those cool little gamepad modes if you do just have two people there. And you don't even need to turn the TV on for those. You can just place it on a table, and you can just use it like a tablet game. So that's quite refreshing. So yeah, I think that's pretty much sums up my experience with Wii Party U so far. What have you been playing?
I beat Pikmin 3, and after that I needed a new console game to play, and so I picked up actually Pandora's Tower, which is just a Wii game, not a Wii U game. It's kind of the last game in, you know, that trio of games that Operation Rainfall here in the United States was trying really, really hard to get over here in the United States. That's good news to me. I mean, we got Xenoblade Chronicles, we got The Last Story, and we finally got Pandora's Tower. And honestly, at this point, I've only gotten like 3 hours into it or so. But at this point, I'm unfortunately kind of thinking that Pandora's Tower doesn't quite measure up to The Last Story and Xenoblade Chronicles, but it does have some redeeming qualities. Foremost of those that sticks out in my mind is the weapon that you wield. You're playing as Aeron. He has, you know, like a sword, and you swing it around with A, which is pretty basic, but he also actually has a chain that he uses. When I first got the game, I thought, okay, I'm just going to play with Classic Controller Pro, because that's the best way to play with Xenoblade Chronicles and The Last Story. So I started out with Classic Controller Pro and quickly decided that I should switch to the Wii Remote and Nunchuck, because when you wield this chain, you just hit the B button to send it shooting at enemies, and it, you know, like attaches to enemies, and this is just one function of it, but you can actually tear at the enemies, is what it's called, by swinging the Wii Remote, and it's surprisingly satisfying. I'm not like a very violent person, but when you have those enemies, you know, like you're hooked onto those enemies with that chain, and you just like waggle the Wii Remote around, it's a very good feeling, and I think that's actually probably the best quality of the game, is just the fact that the Wii Remote actually has a really cool use, because most games, especially of this nature, RPGs, are typically better using the Classic Controller, but I was surprised that I liked the Wii Remote better. Also, in order to use the chain, you have to point at the TV screen. When you've got the Classic Controller, you're moving your cursor around with the right analog stick, which is actually pretty uncomfortable compared to pointing. So that's one good thing.
Yeah, I can imagine the pointer has the advantage if you are kind of moving that reticle across the screen.
Yes.
So I imagine it's a lot quicker to target what you need to just by, you know, flick of the wrist, opposed to having to kind of align that analog stick into the right place. So actually, is it kind of arena-based combat? Is it quite fast, or...?
Yeah, it's pretty fast-paced, but it kind of depends on the enemy that you've got. I mean, Well, for example, in Xenoblade Chronicles, you go up to an enemy and you have to target them and initiate an attack. Either that or certain enemies will actually attack you automatically.
Yeah.
Whereas in this game, enemies are just kind of walking around or in some cases floating around, and you can just walk right past them if you really want to. They'll just fight you automatically, but you can always just walk past them. It is an action RPG, and so, you know, you're swinging your sword with A in real time, and you're using the chain in real time, and it's pretty action-y. There are, I think, 12 different towers. Obviously, I've only gotten to, I think I'm on like the third tower. But there are 12 in the whole game, and each tower ends in a boss fight. And the boss fights are obviously a little more intense and action-oriented. So, but there's actually quite a lot of puzzle solving that goes into this game. You're exploring dungeons, these 12 dungeons, in fact, and solving, you know, minor little puzzles and things like that. And it kind of brings to mind Zelda. Obviously, it's not up to the level of Zelda when it comes to puzzle solving, but that's kind of what it makes me think of.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because I have heard there's some Zelda similarities in this game. So is that more so from the because of the puzzle elements, would you say?
The combat might be a little reminiscent of Zelda, but there's no locking on system.
Yeah.
You swing your sword. I mean, in Zelda, you're swinging the sword with button presses, or in some
traditionally,
cases.
Traditionally, yeah.
Yeah, remote swings. And it's the same in this game, like you're swinging your sword with A and so on and so forth, but there's no locking on system. There's not even really, and this is one of the weaknesses of the game actually, there's not really a good camera system. The camera, it is completely fixed. You don't have any control over it whatsoever. And sometimes that can get in the way of both combat and puzzle solving and so forth. Yeah, mostly it's the puzzles that make me think of Zelda.
The one thing I usually hear about this game, and it's usually the first thing I think people kind of mention, is the story. How much has it kind of unveiled to you of what's happening in the game so far? Just out of curiosity.
At the moment, mostly just the basics. Most of our listeners probably already know this, but it's just about Aeron, and he goes and explores these 12 towers to try and find a cure for Elena, who is slowly transforming into a beast. I don't know if people know this about the game. In order to cure her of being a beast, she has to eat beast flesh, and so that's what Aeron is searching for. She's actually a follower of Eos, a god, which dictates that she can't eat meat. And so you bring her this beast flesh, and it's kind of disturbing how she's like, oh, I really don't want to eat this, but I have to. And it kind of, you know, like shows a close-up of her biting into it and so forth. But something that struck me about the story is how disturbing Elena's transformation is. You see some of the different stages, like there's stage one where she's just kind of like halfway turned into a beast, which isn't pretty. But if you wait long enough, she'll get even worse, and it gets to where you almost want to look away because it's so kind of disturbing and gross.
Actually, on that note, isn't there also some sort of dating similar aspect to this? I'm not sure that's pushing it too far, but I've heard there's some similarities, as in you can buy a presence and you can build up your relationship with her.
Yeah, that's pretty much a dating aspect might be going a little far, because in between towers, you go to the observatory where Elena pretty much spends all her time, and you can save your game there. You can buy things from Mavda, another character who is kind of important to this story. You can buy things from her, upgrade your weapon, create things, and so forth. And also, you can see Elena. She'll just be hanging out in a certain area of the observatory, and you can go up to her, chat with her, which helps the affinity between them grow, and give her gifts, which helps the affinity grow. There are a few little things that make it interesting, like some of the gifts that you can give her are actually useful, like she'll make them into, or, well, for example, there's a belt that you can buy for the bag that you give to her, and it's a gift to her, but she actually uses it on your bag to make it so it can carry more items, which is useful, so there are some good things about bringing gifts to Elena, but it's nothing insanely, you know, deep.
Yeah, okay.
But the relationship between the two is obviously a big part of the storyline and something that people tend to mention a lot.
So how far do you think, roughly playtime-wise, you're through?
I think I'm up to about 3 now.
So about the same amount of towers you've managed to do.
Yeah, I read on a review that it's about a 12 to 15 hour game, and that kind of makes me think like, oh, it'll be about an hour for each tower. So I don't know, it's a nice even number.
Well, I'm very intrigued to see how you find this game as it goes through. It does seem to be kind of the odd one of that Project Rainfall trio, because it kind of got lumbered in with these RPGs where it doesn't really sound like an RPG. It sounds more like a almost like an action adventure game.
Yeah, the one big difference between the three games is that in Pandora's Tower you don't have like a whole party of characters who you can play as, but you know, you level up, you collect items and upgrade your weapons and things like that. So it's pretty RPG-like, but also, you know, a little bit of puzzle elements, a little bit of action.
That sounds good. That should be a good one to watch. With that, we'll move on to the Nintendo news. And first of all, we've had some reports of the review figures from both Mario 3D World. Reviews were coming out today. And for The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds. So these are kind of two of the big holiday titles from Nintendo. And so far, they've been received fantastically. View scores aren't everything, but Mario 3D World currently has a 94.22% average, and Link Between Worlds has a 91.30% average. So absolutely amazing scores there, especially as they are just kind of averages across the board. Amazing figures they're getting there. I personally thought that the reception for 3D World wasn't going to be that great. I thought people might have got a bit tired because of how it was kind of like just a bigger version of a 3D Land. But it's really good to see people really liking this latest Mario game. So yeah, both of those games are coming out on the 22nd of November. We had some more information about both of these games and a load of other Nintendo games from Nintendo's last Nintendo Direct. And this was mostly focused about the 3DS, but there was a few little wee bits here and there. One of the big things which came out of this Nintendo Direct was that the Miiverse update for the 3DS is coming out next month. Alongside that, Nintendo is putting their first steps together to joining a unified account system. So on your 3DS, you'll be able to sign up with the same Nintendo Network ID as you have for your Wii U. And if you do that, you will have a shared eShop balance between the two systems. And technically, the accounts will be linked. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean at this stage that you can buy a virtual console title from one and play it on the other, but we might get there further down the road now that the account systems are in fact in place. Also coming to the 3DS is a YouTube app, and it's almost shocking that we didn't have it in the first place, but an official YouTube client is coming to the 3DS, and an updated version, the Wii U, is coming out, which lets you actually play your YouTube videos on the gamepad screen, as well as search for the next clip while it's playing on the TV. We also saw a special deluxe edition for Bravely Default. Now, this is a kind of a full works thing here. We don't see this treatment much for a Nintendo published game. The big box itself comes with the game. It comes with an art book, a music CD, a bunch of different AR cards. I guess most importantly of all, because it takes up most of the box, is this figurine of one of the main characters from the game. And it looks fairly high quality, to be fair. And obviously that's coming up at a more premium price compared to the regular edition of the game, but that option's available.
Yeah, before you go on, I just thought I would mention to our North American listeners that the figurine won't actually be coming to, of yet anyway, it hasn't been announced for the collector's edition here in the US.
Okay, so apparently that's a European exclusive currently, although I wouldn't be too surprised if the Japanese market had something similar on sale when the original game came out, if not the for the sequel edition that they're getting. We also had some more details on A Link Between Worlds and how it's going to be using Street Pass. The way it's going to be using Street Pass is that you can set up a Dark Link to go and conquer other people's games. Depending on how many hearts you've earned, and depending on which item you choose your Dark Link to have, will affect the bounty which is on your head. And so if anyone manages to kill your Link in their game, they'll get the bounty rewards. And the same goes when you pick up Dark Links in your game. If you manage to defeat them, you get to take the bounty which is on their head. Yeah, so it sounds like a pretty cool way to introduce Street Pass into a more single-player focused adventure game. I like what they've done with that. How do you think about what they're doing with Street Pass in Zelda?
I think it's a pretty good idea. When they first mentioned it about dark links, I at first was obviously confused because I wondered how it was going to work. But when they explained it further, it seems like it'll work okay. But I think that time will tell. I'm still a little skeptical about that.
Yes,
but it is one thing that's nice about it is that there's nothing to lose. You can go and fight someone else's dark link, and it's not like you'll lose rupees if you lose against them. You just won't get the ones that, you know, make up their bounty. So that's kind of nice. I appreciate that touch.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see how well the fights actually work between you and this dark link, as in like how good that AI is. Because I wasn't that impressed by the little video they showed. So again, it might be misrepresented. It seems like the opponent was just kind of running at Link. It wasn't really forming any specific tactics, opposed to just, you know, trying to attack him as fast as he could. But it's a cool use of Street Pass. It's not intrusive, which is good to know as well. And it's not something which you kind of really need to game to complete the main quest either. It's something you can ignore it's not something you want to do. It seems like a good implementation for Street Pass for this type of game.
Yeah. Speaking of Street Pass for, you know, like single player games, did you ever experience Street Pass for Kingdom Hearts 3D?
Oh, that's one I haven't actually picked up, so no, I don't know how that works.
That one had a pretty interesting Street Pass thing.
Is that with the pet system in there?
Kinda. Well, the pets are involved. In order to set up Street Pass to send to other players, you have to make these portals, and you can make a portal wherever you want in the game world, and that's the place that it will appear at in the other person's game world. And it's kind of hard to say, like, I think I recently got a new Street Pass for Kingdom Hearts, and I thought, oh, I have to go check that out. So I go back to Kingdom Hearts and I'm playing it. Then I realize, like, this game world is huge. I have no idea where to find this person's Street Pass. But you can actually have, they're called portals that you set down, and you can have an enemy portal where you send, like, some of your pets against the other player, or you can have, like, a friend portal where you give some of your pets to the other person. And so that was a pretty good use of Street Pass, as long as you play the game consistently, which I don't, and so I still don't know where to find that portal that was sent to me.
Yeah, that sounds like a good system, but it also sounds like it could have been refined a little. But it's good to see that we're still getting the uses of Street Pass. It's not like this feature which was introduced originally at launch but then was forgotten about. It is something which is still being used, and they are finding interesting ways to keep on using it. I do like that concept, and it's good to see them carrying on with it. So the last thing they were really talking about on the Nintendo Direct was focused around Mario 3D World. I think this was the same in the American Nintendo Direct. They had this 10 new things from Mario 3D World. Did you get to check out that video?
Yes, I did.
Oh, brilliant. So yeah, we've got all 10 things here, and they are quite noticeable things, so we'll run by these. So the first thing they're saying is about the touchscreen and microphone usage. As a Wii U game, you would expect it to have kind of these gamepad features, but to be fair, they did seem quite trivial. So essentially what you're doing is there's like certain blocks which may appear to be, you know, slightly different from anything else, and at which point you may be able to tap it on the touchscreen, and, you know, it might push in, or it might come out, or, you know, something might pop out of it. And in the same sort of way, there's certain things where you have a little indication and you can blow into the microphone. And something will happen, whether you'll blow something up from the ground or you'll blow something away. But it's similar use as we've seen in some early DS games.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you on that. It kind of makes me think about Rayman Legends, because when you're playing as Murphy, the touchscreen hero, some of the levels in Rayman Legends actually require you to have the gamepad. And if you're alone, you have to use the gamepad touchscreen to control Murphy while a computer is controlling the character on screen. But it doesn't appear to be the case Super Mario 3D World. But it kind of just looks like the same concept, where you can just interact with some of the features in landscape, and the microphone use is kind of cool. I think about the microphone use in that Donkey Kong minigame in Nintendo Land. There are some platforms that you can lift up by blowing into the microphone in that game. They eventually just resorted to using the X button, which does the exact same thing, so I'm not a huge fan of that. But I guess that they put these two things, the touchscreen and microphone features, at the beginning of the list because they probably wanted to go from, you know, least to greatest, so it makes sense.
Yeah, certainly. But now, you mentioned Rayman Legends. It's just quite surprising for me that Ubisoft seems to, you know, really kind of shown what you can do with the gamepad, because there are some really genius things you can do on those Murphy stages. But then again, you do have this kind of double-edged sword where if you do tune like a good experience to this touchscreen, then on the stages where you're, you know, you are on your own, you can't do both things at once. And so I couldn't quite see Nintendo doing that. If you're doing the touchscreen bit, then they're going to let the computer be Mario and do all the platforming for you. I really couldn't see that happening, and it's probably a good thing that's not the case. However, I think as we move further down this list, that's going to be less of a worry, because we just see they've really poured their energies into just making this just a great Mario game overall. So what was number two on the list was the Golden Express, which is probably out of all of these the most specific. Only appears in one of the levels. This, is it an actual golden train, or is it just a train which features a lot of gold on it?
I think the train is gold. I was just watching the 10 Things trailer before the podcast with my little sister. The train itself was gold, and even the smoke billowing out, you know, at the front of the train was gold. It was coming out gold, so everything is absolutely sheer gold.
Yeah, I know. It chucks out, like, these huge kind of blocks of gold coins, and you can, like run through them, and you can hear the coins, you know, dingling it along, and you keep jumping up and down, you're just collecting them. It looks like those New Super Mario Bros. 2 levels, when they really started pumping out the gold coins. It's cool to see. It does get better as we go down the list. So number three, we've got the Captain Toad levels. So this is a bit change of pace for Mario. So it lets you play as one of the Toad characters, not one of the ones you can normally play, but Captain Toad from the Galaxy games, I believe. However, this Toad can't jump, is my understanding. So he has to navigate around his level, almost more like a puzzle game. So you can't jump, you can just plod around, you can move the camera. And so I think it's giving you more kind of puzzly illusion type tricks. So I think that it will look like it's a dead end, but if you move the camera, you realise that they've played a perspective trick on you, and it's actually a slope going the other way, and you can crawl across to there. We haven't seen too much of these, but that's probably a good thing. However, I'm hoping there's going to be some nice little tricky puzzle elements to change up the pace. These look pretty cool.
Yeah. And they're kind of the first in this list of features that kind of hint that there will be a lot of variety in Super Mario 3D World. You know, puzzle-like levels, and then later on there are some racer-like levels and top-down shooter-like levels, which we will talk about shortly.
One of many few small nods to Mario Galaxy. However, we'll move on to number four. So we've got the speedrun levels. So again, this... Again, notice as we go down here, this game is kind of picking lots of different elements from lots of different Mario games. So this one, for the speedrun levels, you have 100 seconds to complete the level itself, which is very similar to the new Super Luigi Bros. DLC we had. All the levels in that, you also had 100 seconds to complete. Whether these are going to be big or small levels, it's hard to tell with how all these clips are put together. But as the name suggests, I imagine you'll be just constantly running through these levels. It's another change of pace. So it might be that you go from one of these puzzle levels straight into a speedrun level. The variety looks good so far. Okay, next we have the mystery houses. I think this one's probably the one I'm most unsure about. Are these similar to ones which are from 3D Land? These look like kind of cube type levels.
Yeah, it would seem that way. To me, it looks like the green stars that you can collect, I think they're either there's one for each level or maybe there's a couple for each level. I can't seem to recall, but I think the mystery houses are like the way to get the green stars, and they just give you these really, you know, rapid fire challenges that, you know, only last 10 seconds or so. It doesn't seem like all of them are kind of like blocky levels, because there was one that it showed where you're just running away from a bullet bill, and you've got, you know, just a straight track, but it's got obstacles in it as you're, you know, running away from the bullet bill, and that's a little bit of variety with.
Yeah, I guess if they're doing that, they're almost like micro levels. So I guess it's kind of like a set thing, but it's going to be set inside its own level, and you need to kind of access it. Actually, I'll divert away from this list slightly for now, because it's not on there. I'm just noticing from the video itself, the fact that the kind of the world select screen, you can actually run around now for the first time, like in analog. That's pretty cool. And so it looks like there's going to be some secrets you can just kind of go off and explore yourself. And it might be that some of these mystery houses might fall outside of levels themselves. So you might be able to stumble across the one on the world map if you run off to the corner or something like that. So that might be another way they divide up the gameplay. We'll move on to number six now. And this is another one which is fairly specific. So it comes up to the Motley boss blob. I'm not sure out of all the bosses why this one needed to be featured, but at some point you're fighting a Motley boss blob. he looks like he'll be fun to battle.
Well, it looks like a regular boss. Yeah, he just draws a bunch of gooey stuff toward him and makes himself really giant, and you attack him, and all the gooey stuff like falls down and becomes enemies that you have to destroy. It kind of actually makes me think of that last boss in Pikmin 3, just in case anyone hasn't played the game. I don't want to spoil it for you.
However, I think the boss battles could be pretty fun multiplayer, now that you can have up to four Mario characters running around. If we can get some help from a friend to tackle a boss from, multiple angles, that would be pretty unique. So moving on next, number seven, we have top-down shooter stages, which just sounds outrageous. But what it essentially is, so was this Mario with the cannon head block on him from a top-down perspective, or was he firing, was it shells?
I think in one of them it actually has Boomerang Mario and he's throwing boomerangs.
I guess the whole appeal of this one is the camera shoots all the way to the top to do a a top down perspective, and so you're kind of running around in eight directions and I guess primarily shooting things. So yeah, most of these are just kind of how this game is going to change pace. There's like no thread of consistency among these. You're always doing something different, which I think takes us up to number eight, which is kart style stages. So this one took me aback when I saw this one. You didn't quite go into the carts, which was I was kind of really hoping when that name popped up. We just see them all in go-karts. What the stage actually is, there's lots of boost pads which make your characters run really fast, and it looks like it's going to be a race to the finish. Best thing about this stage is the fact it's themed like one of the original Mario Kart multiplayer arenas, and it has the Mario Kart theme tune playing on a loop, it seems. And it just seems really fun, especially in multiplayer. Actually, I'm not sure how great this will be one player, but yeah, especially in multiplayer, when you've got people trying to race to the ends and you've got all these different boosts you're running through across these Mario Kart stages. I can see that being a real good laugh already. Okay, number nine, and we're almost getting into spoiler territory here. So this is an unlockable extra, so if you don't want to hear about anything unlockable, skip forward at least 5 minutes. So this is a unlockable mock arcade game. So it's basically the arcade game Mario Bros, but rebranded Luigi Bros. So this is the one where you're in a non-scrolling screen and you bop on the enemies' heads which come out of pipes. That classic arcade game, but instead of, well, I guess it was Mario and Luigi because it was Mario Bros before, it's the Luigi Bros, which apparently is two Luigis. I'm not sure how you unlock this, but it's cool to have. We don't normally have these sort of these specific types of unlockables in the Mario games. However, this then moves us on to another unlockable, which some people were claiming it was fell too far into the spoiler territory. And so again, if you're still listening to this but you don't want anything specific spoiled to you and you somehow haven't heard about it yet, which would surprise me, again, skip forward at least 5 minutes. So their final number 10 thing, new thing in Mario 3D World, is a fifth playable character, which is Rosalina from Mario Galaxy. They haven't confirmed like she is final playable character, but it's kind of assumed so, but you never know. So her special move is it's kind of like a spin attack, it seems, which kind of also lets her hover for a little bit.
Well, I really appreciate Rosalina being in the game just because, well, this is more for more of a personal thing, but I have always just been a huge fan of stories in general and particularly characters. And so, Rosalina being one of Mario's best characters, I just really like it when she appears in things like Mario Kart and so forth. But her spin attack is actually really reminiscent of Mario's spin attack in Galaxy, and it kind of makes me wonder whether Mario will have a spin attack. Because if the spin attack is Rosalina's move, then Mario, I don't know, it would be kind of unfair if Mario had the spin attack as well. And so, like in Galaxy, she can jump and spin and kind of suspend in midair for a little bit longer, which can be very useful. And she can also use the spin attack while she's running along to attack enemies and so forth. So I think she'll be a really good character to play as.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you wonder if there will be five player support in in Super Mario 3D World. It could happen, maybe.
That's what I initially thought it was telling us, but the way it's worded, I don't think it is the case. I think it is still four players, but I mean, it does support five controllers. I mean, it obviously it's other games have done it for the Wii U. See, I'm surprised they didn't announce it had five player support at the same time, but I don't think it does. But I wouldn't say for guarantee this is the last unlockable character. Just the way it was worded makes me think there could be someone else. It might not be anyone of huge importance. Might be, the other missing Toad from the new Super Mario games. I did want to bring up the question, there did seem to be a bit of an outcry how Nintendo is giving away too much information, how they're kind of, you know, they ruin it by giving out spoilers in a Nintendo Direct. Now, I'm kind of under the way of thinking that if the company whose game it is announcing the details themselves, it cannot be a spoiler. Now, you might be able to point to an example where someone has kind of abused that kind of position, but my standing is that the creator of the game can decide upon themselves what information to give out before the game is out on stores to buy, you know, which stuff to keep back. And because a game, especially like 3D World, doesn't involve story at all beyond, you know, basically what they've already shown us, there's a bunch of these little fairy people who get kidnapped and you need to rescue them, I don't think the unveiling of Rosalina here is necessarily even a spoiler. If it's Nintendo coming out and saying it before launch, that's kind of information that is unlockable. It's not story related. I can't imagine halfway through the game Rosalina has a story specific reason to be in 3D World. It's just you're going to unlock her at some point. So that's kind of my stance of it. What do you think, Holly?
Well, I'm with you. I mean, first of all, I just want to ask, I don't know if the European Nintendo Direct was different from ours, but in ours, just before the 10 new things from Super Mario 3D World video, Reggie Fils-Aimé, it was all like, okay, now we're going to show you some things about Super Mario 3D World, and beware, there might be some spoilers. So did they, in the Nintendo Direct, actually warn you about spoilers?
I don't think they did in the European one. Not that it particularly concerned me, because I didn't think about much at the time. I just thought, wow, that's a pretty cool one to save for the end. But I'm not entirely sure the European one did. They give out a little spoiler warning. But no, I did hear Reggie did for the American one.
Yeah, I find that kind of interesting. Because what you were saying about, you know, if the developer is okay giving out this information before the game is released, then it can't be a spoiler, but Reggie Fils-Aimé seems to think so.
Yeah, again, it's hard to say. I don't want to speak for him, obviously, but my thinking was he was doing it almost a bit tongue-in-cheek because he knows the audience can be very particular about their property. So I think he was just kind of doing it in a more of a fun way. But yeah, some people have really kind of taken it aback. If you do think the same and you're listening to this and you do think Nintendo has been giving out too much information and you'd rather discover these things all on your own, then write into us and we'll read out your email on the next show. The email is contact@infendo.com. Okay, and the next item we have are a series of new TV advertising campaigns that Nintendo is using. One of the ones they're using for the Wii U is called The Pitch. Now, I've seen this on YouTube, but apparently this is also airing on TV in America now. Would you be able to give us a quick description of what the ad entails and we can talk about whether it's effective?
Well, as far as I know, there are two different Pitch ads, and the first one came out a while ago, and it's just a family. You've got the parents, and the kids actually come up with this pitch for the parents to show the parents why they need to upgrade to Wii U. And the second Pitch commercial is the exact same way, except it's like a couple of little kids pitching the idea of the Wii U upgrade to a couple of other little kids. And I think the idea behind these commercials is obviously, you know, geared toward families. I mean, I can see these commercials airing on Disney Channel and things like that. So that's one aspect about them, is that they're very, very family oriented. And but another aspect of them is that they make a point of describing how the Wii U is a completely different thing from the Wii. And so I think that's another direction that Nintendo wanted to take, was to just show people that Wii and Wii U are two different things and you'll have to buy a whole new system to play all these new Wii U games coming out.
Yeah, I like the core message of the new campaign. At first I was a bit confused. Why didn't they use the obvious stuff like the, you know, obviously it comes with the gamepad, that's a big difference and all that sort of stuff. But I think they took a step back, and so the fact they've just come out here and said, this is the new console from Nintendo, this is the new Wii, it plays the new games that you're going to want to play. You can't play these games on your current Wii, you're going to have to upgrade for this price to play the latest Nintendo games. It just kind of really cuts to the point. And the fact that they got some really good games like 3D Worlds to promote it, that kind of makes a lot more sense now. So, you know, I could see that working. It definitely seems a lot better than that kind of first TV campaign they had, where it's like a load of people in boxes. And it was kind of going around all the different experiences they were having. I think, yeah, this just gets straight to the point a lot better. Hopefully they're going to go in a similar line of adverts. Now, I could see them hopefully doing an advert which is aimed at a, you know, a higher age group, but just kind of keep that focus on, you know, this is the new Nintendo console. It's a lot cheaper than the competition. It plays these awesome games. And it's, you know, it is the upgrade to the Wii, which is probably in your household, because we sold so many of those things. I also saw that 3DS TV campaign. That one I really did like. I thought that was really smart. So, yeah, so as you were saying, it was the different kids are explaining why they like their 3DS. And there was actually a surprising amount of just, you know, in-game footage as they're talking about it. I thought that one was pretty smart as well. I think these adverts are going to do pretty well for them. They're obviously, you know, catered towards a fairly low target range, was my impression. But yeah, I think for the audience they're serving, these should go down quite well.
What's interesting to me about the 3DS commercial, though, is that Nintendo's targeting a younger audience, and that's kind of what the 2DS is for. And so I was kind of surprised to see in this 3DS commercial that most of these kids were carrying 3DS XLs,
yeah,
which I actually wouldn't recommend for young kids because it's pretty heavy and, you know, big. If you've got small hands, it would actually kind of probably be a little bit of a challenge to play on. But that was one thing that kind of interested me about that.
Yeah, I think they've still got a bit of a confusing kind of a brand there with 3DS and the 2DS being part of the 3DS family. But the sales figures should prove themselves on that, on the actual storefront on that one. Okay, I think that about wraps up for the TV campaign. I think that nicely moves us on to our final feature now, which is Thanks for the Games. So this is going to be our Thanksgiving special feature, and we're just going to talk about some games, perhaps ones which already have come out or might be coming out soon, but just kind of games that we're thankful for whatever reason.
The one I have in mind actually isn't a new game, it isn't an upcoming game, it's actually a very old game, and one that probably everybody knows. It's Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo, which was one of those games that I grew up on. Grew up on a lot of different games, and the reason that I bring this one up specifically is just because it probably had the biggest influence on my, you know, gaming life, because I would not be the gamer that I am today without that game. You know, it's pretty easy for beginners to get into, but it's also got a lot of depth, and I just have such, you know, fond memories of it that I just can't imagine the gaming industry without it. In a similar vein, Ocarina of Time also comes to mind as a game that I played a lot when I was really young. That game is the reason that I am a Zelda fan. I mean, if it weren't for Ocarina of Time, I wouldn't be a Zelda fan. If it weren't for Super Mario World, I wouldn't be a Nintendo fan at all. And so those are kind of the games that come to mind when I think of games that I am grateful for.
Yeah, there's some pretty good choices there. Now, the first game, and we did actually touch this on the last show, the Zelda game which got me into the series, the first Zelda game which came out for the portable systems, was Link's Awakening for the Game Boy. And so that was a game which I'm very thankful for, because not only did it get me into Zelda, but it was also got me into Nintendo a lot more than I kind of appreciated beforehand, in a way that only a Zelda game can. But a more modern game that I like to be thankful for is something also I've talked about on the show before, so I won't talk about it too much now, is the latest Phoenix game. And the reason why, not just because I'm a fan of the series, but because it did seem like that series was dead, especially because the last game was never translated over here. So the Miles Edgeworth 2 game came out in Japan, but never came out in America or Europe, and nothing was really said or heard for years after that. So it seemed that because of declining sales, as I think it was also especially across Europe and America, where it had stayed fairly popular in Japan still, that the series had just kind of fallen apart. But just the fact that because of the sort of time we're in, and because they've managed to release this worldwide digital distribution, and have also been able to sell it cheaper, so I assume they think they can hit the audience they need to with that. I think it's great that they've managed to bring out another one of these games. And I'm about halfway through this now, and I know it's a different team working on this one, but they really have managed to capture the feel of the original game, and it's just as funny and just as crazy as before. So that's a modern game I'm thankful for. Are there any more on your side which come to mind?
There are tons of video games to love out there, new and old alike, and, you know, I could spend forever talking about all the games that I like, but I better just leave it at those two that I mentioned before.
Yeah, certainly. I'll finish off with probably an unexpected game. It's, however, one of the launch titles for the Wii U, which is Nintendo Land. So I think this is a game which goes under the radar quite a bit, and I think it's very underappreciated. And especially how it's getting cut out of most of the bundles now, which the Wii U come with. And I think that's a little bit strange, because I think Nintendo Land succeeded in what it was trying to do, and that was show off what the Wii U gamepad can actually do. And it went along in a very specific way, and the best usages of that game are in multiplayer. Although it does have a lot of single player stuff in there, the games which are up to five players are absolutely fantastic, especially on that higher range, basically four or five people. You get them together to play either the Animal Crossing game, the Luigi Mansion game, or the Mario Chase game. There's nothing quite like that in the entire gaming world that I can think of that have anything similar to that, where one person is, kind of playing their own meta game, and the other four people in the same room are kind of joining up, playing on that TV to defeat that other person who's doing something completely different with different tools. We're still not so much anymore, but we still get that game out every now and again, and it still stays fresh, which most party games have kind of failed by that length of time. It's also just kind of shows Nintendo's creativity and their kind of just ballsiness to kind of do what they think is a fun thing to do. They're not following any sort of business trends or anything else when they created those sets of crazy games. It's kind of started off on their little quest when they had the, connectivity for the Game Boy Advance and the GameCube, and even before that with the transfer pack on the N64 and the Game Boy. And it seems like they finally managed to complete this experience that they first set off when they had that little joint venture with Namco to make Pac-Man Versus, which used that connectivity tool on the GameCube and the GBA. And you can see how some of those Nintendo Land experiences have kind of been inspired by that original partnership. And I think that's a nice little game which kind of represents how unique Nintendo can be. I know a lot of people kind of expect them to turn out these fantastic Mario games and these Zelda games, which we've got two great examples which are coming out this fall, both getting, scores ranging in, the nines and a half out of tens. But they can also do these crazy, odd concept games, these very risky strategies, and make it their launch title game. And so that's a game I'm thankful for. I do want to make sure that if there are, like, Nintendo fans listening and they have a 3DS but they don't have a Wii U, if you are picking up a Wii U soon, maybe one of these new, Mario bundles have taken your fancy with the new price drop, or possibly the Zelda one. Do hunt out a copy of Nintendo Land, especially if you can get a group of friends together to play it. It is quite unlike anything else.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. I think that it's kind of a shame that there's no more Nintendo Land bundle to get because I can't imagine having my Wii U without Nintendo Land now that I've had it for a few months. And I just want to echo what Lewis said. Get a Wii U and be sure to get Nintendo Land if it doesn't come with it
Turn
already.
into the Nintendo Land promotion show. But yeah, that's one thing. I mean, if there are new buyers out, picking up the Wii U, especially with the, although it's a really good value, the new, well, the new Super Mario Land bundle, which comes with that and the Luigi game, it just seems an odd fit for your first Wii U experience. As good as those games are, they're very traditional games. But beyond the fact you can play it on the gamepad with the TV turned off, it doesn't really offer you much new. But that's really a discussion for another day. We've covered like a nice little range, and that is going to close it for the feature. Now, if you've got any questions for ourselves, you can always email them in at contact@infendo.com. If you send in enough emails, we can dedicate a nice little mail segment of the show, or even do a full mail episode, depending on how many we get in. And of course, if you're listening to this on your browser, you can always leave in a question in the comments box below. And that's all for tonight from myself and from Holly. Thanks for listening. And this has been Infendo Radio.
See you guys.
See you later.